Hey guys, welcome back to Untucked. On Coach's Corner this week, we are going to talk about people wanting to help their children and grandchildren and that being possibly detrimental to their financial plan. We're going to discuss society and our need to be first to do things and to report on them or show them off. And then finally, we're going to wrap up with an article about Pink Whitney, a vodka collaboration between Spit and Chicklets, a Barstool sports podcast, and New Amsterdam Vodka. Enjoy. The opinions expressed on this podcast are our own and do not reflect the opinions of FC Advisory, Financial Coach Group, or the New Wealth Project. Nothing discussed on this podcast should be interpreted as investment advice. Welcome to Untucked.
What's up, everybody? This is Jeff.
Hey, it's Mike.
What do we got for a fun fact?
54 million people that are alive right now will be dead in 12 months.
Damn.
In the world?
In the world.
I'm not seeing how that's like, oh, wow, that's higher than I thought.
It's way higher than I thought it would be.
But there's like 7 billion people.
I know. But when you say to me 55 million people die a year, that blows my mind.
Okay.
There's 132 million births, roughly.
Okay. That number seems lower than I would have expected.
Really?
Yes.
360,000 births per day.
A lot of babies.
15,000 births per hour.
Okay. All right. We got it.
Simple division.
That was not fun. Morbidity is not
fun. It was
fun.
Just a fact, man. Why does it always have to be fun?
Fun's in the title.
It's called your fun fact.
It's in the title.
All right. We don't need to spend a ton of time on Philly sports.
No. I mean, nothing has happened in a week at all. Flyers haven't even played. Eagles have not played. Phillies have not played. Sixers
have.
I guess they have.
Yeah.
So, last night was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Did you see it, Mike?
Nope.
Did you see the tribute to Kobe?
No, I didn't. I didn't.
I think the coolest part of it was the 8-second violation off the tip. So Kobe's first number was 8. Mm-hmm. So Sixers win the tip. Ben Simmons immediately puts it on the ground. And just they all just stand there. And they let 8 seconds run off the clock. It's an 8-second violation. Coincidentally, who are they playing? Golden State. Golden State gets the ball. They immediately take the ball and put it on the ground, and they stand there for 24 seconds. They get a 24-second violation, which was also Kobe's number. So I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, it wasn't coincidental. That was planned.
No, but the penalties.
Oh, like happening like
how that
to
happened
be
that way. Like off the tip, it's 8 seconds because you don't cross half court.
Right.
And then they got it past half court and let 25. It's just kind of cool that the sport allows for that, and he happened to wear those two numbers.
Yeah, everyone's done it. Every team who's played since it happened has done that.
Right, right.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I agree.
And then Joel wore 24.
He had to get permission from who?
Oh, it's a
Bobby
retired,
Jones?
Yeah, it's a retired Sixer.
Is it a Sixer?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. I mean, I just don't know history.
And then Joel scored 24. And on his whatever bucket got him, I don't know if it was his 12th, to the 24th point, apparently he's claiming he said Kobe when he shot it.
Yeah, I read that too.
Wait a minute, back to Bobby Jones. He had to get Bobby Jones's permission?
If that's who's in the rafters, yes.
I don't think he had to. I think he just called the guy
maybe
and said, look, your number's retired. Is it cool if I wear it tonight?
And what if Bobby Jones said no?
Can you imagine?
That would be like a Seinfeld.
That
episode.
Would be like a Larry David. Like, no, yeah, I don't think so.
Bobby Jones, in honor of the Secretary of Defense. Thanks.
Yeah, it's been a pretty horrific week in Philadelphia sports. There's been nothing. Mm-hmm.
Nothing to speak of other than the fact that there's going to be an Andy Reid Appreciation Day tomorrow on WIP. You believe this?
No.
Now,
but I also don't listen to WIP.
Angelo Cataldi's The Morning Show. He's actually rebelling, and he's hosting a depreciation day for Andy. But all the other people that host their shows, it's like literally they're just going to talk and praise Andy Reid.
Angelo's such a jerk. You know? Why do you have to do that? Don't trash the guy. He did a good job. Come on.
I know he's doing it for entertainment value today.
And all that.
It's all entertainment.
And there's nothing else to talk about, and that's partially
right,
what...
Right. By the way, deep down, Angelo Cotati doesn't like Andy Reid. Actually, he might not.
I think he might not. He probably doesn't like Andy.
He's always talked about how he hates the fact that, whether this is entertainment or not, he does it a lot about he can't stand that Andy hires domestic abusers and all this, you know, these athletes that have been convicted or accused of horrific stuff. And he repeatedly talks about it, so I'm assuming that he actually genuinely feeling very favorable of Andy Reid.
So for us though, Philly, do we go to like Villanova basketball or any of that stuff? If there's
unless we just want to do like a Jay Wright appreciation pod, I can get down with that. But otherwise, absolutely not.
I'm very curious.
Big five basketball fans.
what's your take on this on Andy? Like everybody around here seems to be like all juiced up about Andy in the Super Bowl. I can care less. I don't care if he wins or loses.
I have like a mild favoritism towards him winning. Mild. Yeah. I don't really like I don't care that much, but I would prefer to see him win than lose here.
I don't have a rooting interest, and because I don't, I'm rooting for Andy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now you're 100% indifferent.
Indifferent whatsoever.
So, like, do you care who wins on Sunday?
No, absolutely not. Could care less.
Okay.
Couldn't care less. Sorry, Mike.
Okay.
I couldn't care less if the Niners and Garoppolo win or if Mahomes and Reed win. Like, if Reed wins, great. I have zero feeling watching him get Gatorade dumped on him. If he loses, I have zero feeling that way either. I just hope it's a good football game. I haven't seen football in 2 weeks. I can't wait to watch it.
Okay.
I'm kind of indifferent. I don't really care if I watch it or not.
What's interesting is Andy Reid, the last time he was in the Super Bowl, lost horrifically to the Patriots.
Yeah.
And who's the coach of the Niners?
Shanahan.
Shanahan. He was the offensive coordinator for Atlanta when they hosted a horrific meltdown in a loss in a Super Bowl to the Patriots. I'm sorry. Did I say
you
Niners?
You said Niners to Reid.
Andy lost
to the
Patriots.
Oh,
Shanahan,
I see. Got it.
Offensive coordinator for the Falcons when they lost to the Patriots, when the Patriots were up 28 to like
three. Came back and won. Wow. For someone who's indifferent, you know a lot of facts.
So they're both losers to the Patriots in the Super Bowl.
Tom Brady curse.
All right.
That's it, huh?
On to our articles.
That's it.
Okay, the first article we are going to talk about is our Coach's Corner, which is called Failure to Launch. It was written by Eric Rasmussen. It was in Financial Advisors Magazine. Parents and grandparents wanting to help their children and grandchildren financially is probably the most popular goal of people we work with after, say, maybe traveling. And our job as financial advisors is to balance the desire for our clients to help and gift and share with their next generations and to make sure that they are financially secure themselves. Sometimes they gift and give because they want to, and sometimes because they have to.
I'm a huge fan of gifting and helping. I think it's our role to help people to start to think about their wealth bigger than they think about it now. And, you know, you've worked and saved your whole life to accumulate this nest egg or whatever you have. And what are you going to do with it? Are you just going to have it and have it sit there to pay for your lifestyle and your vacations until you die and then it goes to your family or whoever? So I think I'm a huge proponent of putting that thought into it and building a plan to perpetuate your wealth while you're alive and when you're dead. I think it's just a matter of making sure you're doing that in a way, because you're in constant communication with your kids, that this isn't a handout, or we're able. And I don't necessarily know how you do that. I think I think it's a process of you raise your kids appropriately and the right way so that they appreciate money and they appreciate hard work. And then if you do that, I think it's possible to help them out financially as they get older and it not get taken for granted and it not spoil them and entitle them. But I think there's a lot of cases where it does. Like we have a client that we advised against paying off her daughter's $60,000 credit card debt. Advised against, like she's like, when I found out my daughter had the 60 grand in debt, I have to help her. And we advised, no, you don't. And she did anyway. And then 2 weeks later called us and said, you are absolutely right. I shouldn't have done that. She was away this weekend on vacation in New York, running up her credit card again.
So I think what you said about like the answer is, I mean, on paper, it's you raise your kids the right way so that they have the right perspective on money and learn about it the right way. But that's not the way reality works. And so the issue becomes really hard. I think on the one end of the spectrum, it's parents who themselves can barely afford to make their lives work and their retirements work and all that, that are giving away money when they can't afford to do it at all personally. And then I think on the other extreme, it's ultra wealthy people who are really worried about their kids once they recognize how much money there is becoming just deadbeats or worse. And the whole industry, the whole ultra wealth financial advisory business is a big part of that, is counseling those clients as to how to deal with that. Like some children have no idea how much their parents have, and others have an idea maybe because it's public. It's really hard. It's very hard because every person's different. Kids are different. Some grow up very responsible and grounded about it, no matter how much is like, say, I'm quote unquote coming to them. But I think it's a really hard issue, and it's not really black or white. And the emotional part of it, for Jeff, your example, where the parent just wants to help their kid, and maybe in the back of their mind, they know it's going to be pissed away. But I don't know. I'm just like rambling about it. And my point is, it's a very hard issue.
It's interesting because you broke it into two categories, and there's multiple categories, right? So like the couple that, or the client that is giving money away to their kids or helping their kids, and it is going to doom their financial situation. I can't help you, right? We can't help them. And we've said that to people. I mean, like, if you keep doing this, if you keep lending money to this kid or bailing that kid out of jail or giving this kid his $30,000 for this project or work, you're going to run out of money. Can't help you. Then there's the ultra wealthy, which you just said, that they need to figure out how to get their wealth to them without ruining their lives, because a lot of times it does. It literally ruins their lives. The statistics show that these people inherit wealth and then like X amount of years later, they're divorced, like their kids are in jail. I mean, it's not good. And then there's this group that we also work with, you know, the millionaires next door. Like we have a widowed client, and she's got a couple $1 million. And my advice was, you know, you can certainly give your son and his wife $15,000 this year. She felt awesome about it. The son and wife called me and was like, thank you. It didn't change. It changed their life from the standpoint of like, who can appreciate 15 grand, but like no one's quit their job. No one has become an asshole because of it. Do you know what I mean? I think there's this other world where if it's done right and you have the right people involved, it can be hugely impactful, and it's awesome.
Yeah, but I think that last example you gave is in some ways the easiest one. It's someone who can afford to give a modest amount to their kids. It's not going to make or break either one, and everybody feels great about it. I think it's those other extremes that are problematic. I think that as much as a lot of people are envious of people who have killed it and have tens or hundreds of millions in wealth or more, kind of feel for, I mean, I hate to say it, but you kind of feel for how much of a challenge it must be for those people to who desperately want their kids to grow up with certain values and grounded and all that. And they sit there and like, how are we going to do this when there's so much money that's obviously going to be inherited? Unless you do like the Warren Buffett thing, and I'm not sure if this is even accurate, where he says,
give it all away.
None of my kids are getting anything. All of it's going to charity.
Probably. I mean, Jobs was pretty much the same way when they were raising his daughter. I read her memoir book, and she was like, he was an asshole. He wouldn't pay for a damn thing. Now, I don't know how much of that was true or not, but that's certainly an...
That's one option. That's one option. Way to go.
You're not getting anything. No, I hear you. I mean, I think it's you have these people that are helping their children financially. I don't think it's helping the kids at all. I think it's one thing, like you said, to gift somebody something, a modest amount that you said it perfectly. But here's $100,000 to help you with the down payment of your house. Or, yeah, you're 40 years old. You can continue to live in our house and we're giving you a stipend every, like it's, and we have it, right? I mean, we have so many clients that.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely financially help out their children to a greater tune than $15,000 a year. I'm staggered by how generous our clients are to their kids.
Yeah, and then what it comes to is, like your point, Jeff, the advice has to be, sorry, you have to tell them you are cut off. And that's got to be very hard for the
they can't.
They
for
don't.
The parent to do.
They can't.
I've said it.
Yeah.
We're done with these kids. And they're like, we're absolutely done. And then like a year later, it's like, oh, so-and-so had this happen. It's so unfortunate. He lost his job. Like, we have to help him. Like, no, you don't. In fact, the help would probably be, don't help him. Let them figure. I mean, I told one client, she said, we got to help our son with this. We're going to lend him $50,000. Like, wait, because he lost his job. He's got a job. He had a job, right? Yeah. So he had a 401k, right? Oh, yeah. Well, have him take a friggin' loan from his 401k. Oh, you can do that? Yeah. Like, at some point, some of these kids that get themselves in a financial, they got to find their way out of it. Shit, I know I would. I know I would. Like, if I had financial difficulty, I'm not going to put that on anybody else's shoulder. It's my fault. I got to dig my way out of it, right? Why do you feel like because your parents can financially help you that you should accept it? Meg, you got any thoughts on this?
We're with you.
No, I think
awfully quiet over there, Meg. You getting a stipend from mom and dad?
No. I agree. I think there is part of me that I've always, and I don't know if this is really the same thing you're describing. Like, I've always felt like I could take, I don't know if risk is the right word, but like, I've always felt that if I failed at something, I had a safety net and not my own. I had my parents. My parents are not like anything heirs. Like,
right.
They're thousand heirs, if that's like a thing you can be. So, like, but they've always given or gifted or provided for us whatever we needed, wanted, you know, in really any capacity. Now, I had a very like normal upbringing. And I guess part of me does not feel entitled to it at all. But I do know that if there was ever a situation where I needed it, they would without a doubt give it, whatever that would be.
Right. You hit rock bottom. I got to come home. I need a year at home. Like, obviously, they're not going to turn
you
away.
No questions asked.
Right, right.
Yeah. Now, I, like, personally know myself, and, like, it would have to be horrible for that to be what I choose to do. But there is something, like, kind of freeing about knowing that, like, I have that, and I'll probably always have that.
Right.
Not that it's going to dictate my decision making, but I don't know. It allows me to just not really worry.
And just, I guess, that's an interesting take. And if your parents were heirs at some level, I mean, maybe that's how some people feel. Look, it's okay if we stretch on this house, even though we can't afford it, because I know
mom
and dad will help.
I think that's an example that I would not, it wouldn't apply to me.
Right.
Like when I talk about like rock bottom, it would be like, I lost my, you know what I mean? Like I have nothing. I'm destitute, desolate, whatever. So
desolate's like a barren area of land, isn't it?
So destitute.
Yeah, I think destitute, you got it.
Like that would be the case. It wouldn't be like, oh, I want a car that I can't afford. Can you spot me $400 a month for the payment?
Right.
So I don't know. Like now my siblings in different capacities have required more of my parents financially specifically than I have. Now my parents paid for college for me. Not all of my siblings went to college. So I think in my parents' mind, there's like a, we got to even it up or true it up factor that exists. And I think that's another part of this that we haven't really touched on, the idea that clients of ours with multiple children or grandchildren with one kid, like they try to keep things fair. So if they're helping one kid because they need help, then they feel like they want to gift to another kid because they want to keep it even. Like it's super complicated. And it's the only area that I've found where like there is no rational reasoning with the person on the other side of the table. It's emotionally driven like 100%.
Yeah, you can't look at it, you can't approach it unemotionally.
Like, I can't show them that this gift is going to derail their plan and keep them from doing it.
Right.
It's impossible. It doesn't change their line of thinking.
Which is exactly the reason they hire us, and they just ignore that advice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was an interesting, I found the article cool to read because it's so applicable to our everyday life.
Yeah.
And if someone can figure out how to deliver wealth to the next generation without it negatively impacting them, they'd be set for life.
There's just too many people like in the world.
And there's obviously more generational wealth being and to be transferred in the coming years because of just the massive amount that's there compared to ever before. And I think probably there's a fair number of younger people who are counting on that as their saving, like future savings that comes to them. But I know I'm just thinking about some of the clients that are grandparents who just complain and bitch and moan about how spoiled the grandkids are by their own kids. And they look at it like, I mean, it's not what we're talking about specifically, but it reminds me of that where, and maybe we're talking about like back to generational, you know, critiques, but I mean, it's just, yeah, I mean, it's the handouts that are given to younger people from older generations. I think a lot of people have a problem with that who didn't get it themselves.
I struggle with that only because it's going to get to them eventually. Right? Like if we're talking about somebody who's going to pass wealth being mad about someone else who gifts it while they're alive, like what's the point in caring? Why, like what's the difference, I guess?
Right.
Seeing someone enjoy it while you can be a part of it versus you dying and it getting split up however many ways.
Yeah. And maybe it's just their view as they're growing up or they're being raised or they're being taught in the wrong way, as opposed to inheriting something down the line. I don't know.
There's probably ways you can get around it. It's just super complicated. Like I'm just sitting here thinking as you guys are talking. I'm like, all right, so you want to give money to your kids because they need help with something. Like, why don't you just pay for the vacations, right? Every family wants to take vacations. So you take that financial burden off them so they don't have to save for vacation. Or maybe you can accumulate money in like a retirement account for them that they
or
can
a college account for
or a co- like that way that financial burden's not on their shoulders anymore. Hey, you got a problem with you can't afford your mortgage. That's your problem. You need to figure that out. You can still take the vacations. We got that. We're still going to help you accumulate for retirement. You know, we got that. Or college. We got that. I don't know. I mean, there's too many personalities. There's too many people. There's too many emotions to be able to kind of, this is the solution. I mean, I heard years ago, an attorney talk about leaving money in trust to children and saying, you know, the typical, like you can get it at 25, 35, 45. This guy wrote into the trust that you can take out as much as you earn. So if you have a 1099 or a W-2 and you made 50 grand, you could take 50 grand out. I'm sure there's like creative ways like that around it. But then the old argument is, what if they have a kid that needs a $250,000 surgery?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You get a loan. You could pay it out over 5 years, I guess. But I'm sure there's creative ways to do it. But I'm just not smart enough to know how to do it yet.
All right. Good stuff.
Moving on. The race to be first. So this was another one from Ramp Capital. Ramp talks about our societal need to be first to watch a new show or read a book or visit a new popular destination. The sharing of that first is often done on some sort of social media platform, usually to show off. Ramp reflects on this and discusses how the recent passing of Kobe Bryant and his death was shared by news outlets, media sources, and really anyone on Twitter, really just trying to be the first to share the information, and how it's really just, it's made for receiving information. It to be difficult to understand what's real, what's fake, what's true, what's not, in that case specifically, I guess.
I like being the first to distribute information. I immediately texted you, dude, I think Kobe just died in a helicopter crash. Like, I like that. I like reaching out to people and informing them of something. I'm not a journalist. I don't have the responsibility. And I certainly didn't tweet it.
Well, I think
I think if you are like sending that information into the blogosphere or whatever the hell you want to call it, I think is absolutely wrong if you don't know for fact that this happened. Like what happened with the media and with journalism during this whole Kobe was an absolute travesty. And unfortunately, that's not going to change. Because just like I want to text a friend, holy shit, did you see the Eagles just won? Right? Because I know that they're not watching the game. Like, that's cool to me. That's fine. You can do that. But what happened with Kobe, these people should lose their jobs over it. I think it's just complete and utter bullshit that it was handled that way.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, this isn't any different than what's different about it now is technology. Because back when it was like the New York Times and the Washington Post and like the local news people breaking a story, there was definitely, I mean, obviously it was different, but I think there was definitely more of a sense of responsibility to make sure everything's correct before you put it over the news wires.
Right.
And it was obviously a different process. Now it's so easy to put it on the news wires. But remember that, like, the only motivation to be first is, unlike you, Jeff, who just feels good about it, is eyeballs, which mm-hmm. equals revenue.
Right.
So the
right.
TMZ and all the others that are competing to be first are doing it for financial incentives at the end of the day, which doesn't make it right. I think it's horrible, and I don't know what you do about it. I really don't. I mean, I think it's terrible, and you can cause a great, you can, they do cause a great deal of damage to people by being wrong and by being just irresponsible. But I don't know what you do about it, because it's like that technology genie's out of the bottle. What are you going to do? Put like speed bumps on social media to filter out before? I just don't know. It's terrible, but it's a fact of the way that communication is disseminated, information is disseminated now.
Yeah, and I mean, it's like the Kobe example is obviously egregious, but take it to like what social media is for. It's to share your thoughts, your feelings, something you did with a bunch of people. It's eyeballs and clicks. Like, that's what my social media is for, even though that's, you know, in theory, like, I'd like to think that's not what I'm doing. But, like, I put a picture on Instagram because I want people to see what I'm doing. Right?
We're all really shitty examples of it, but I understand what you're saying. But like, you post maybe on Instagram four times a year.
Right.
I post maybe two. 12 times a year, mm-hmm. and it's never my family on vacation with me. I mean, well, It's very rare that I'm sharing an important moment in my life with the rest of the world.
Well, the rest of the world, they are four followers.
It's kind of harsh, Meg. No, but I mean, that's
the function of it in and of itself.
That's the function. And I think that's the problem in and of itself. That's the problem.
That's what I mean. And then you get to Kobe and it's like, holy shit, this has gone too far. But to your point, Mike, can't like now back it down.
It's unfortunate that social media is so popular, but that's just, it's bottom line human nature. People love showing you how great they are or how sad they are.
But you can use the high school example about the people that love to be the first to break the news about so-and-so.
Right.
Something happening to so-and-so. I mean, it's no difference. Human nature to be you said, Jeff, to be that like, I mean, I don't want to use the word gossip, but to gossip. Be the one to be the first to break it. Yeah. And I guess it gives you some sort of special feeling to be the, people are like, wow, really?
Jeff was the first one who told me that. Yeah. Like, that's why I would do it. But like the high school example you gave, it was contained. It was contained in your town. It's not anymore, dude.
No way.
Like, I'm listening to ABC News tell me that all four of Kobe's daughters were on the helicopter. That guy should lose his job. Absolutely should lose his job.
Well, right now, the incentive is for anyone in the news media to be first, not necessarily accurate, because no one's going to lose their job over that, probably. Yeah.
I think part of the news piece of it, too, is so you have, and I'm just making up a count, you have CNN, you have AP, you have U.S. World News, right? Like, let's just say three, quote-unquote, reputable sources. And then you have, for every reputable source, there's a million other accounts, whether it's TMZ, whether it's Shade Room, whether it's even, like, I would argue Bleacher Report, right? From, like, ESPN down to Bleacher. Like, there are so many other outlets that, like, I personally don't follow CNN. Because there's not a lot of value in that for me other than depressing shit. Mm-hmm. But I may follow somebody who's like, I don't know, 10 degrees separated from CNN because they're a funny meme account that decided to get involved in the Kobe thing. I consider myself smart enough to be like, okay, so if like memes with a Z, if that account's tweeting something, like, it might not be correct.
Right.
But like, how many people don't think to go to a legitimate source before sharing it with their followers? And then it just is this web that gets bigger and bigger. So to me, it's obviously like who gets there first, but then it's somehow controlling, if it's even possible, all of the bullshit accounts that don't have any standards. There's nothing that you are required to like be held to. There's no journalistic integrity. Does that even exist now?
No. And it's not going to exist. There's no way to filter it. There's no way to change it. There's no way to put laws on what you can share, or you just become China. But I mean, it's just a product of humans and the way that we behave, and social media is an absolute aggravator of it, which is, I hate social media. I'm adamant about that. And just this whole idea of, like, even my family, it's like, oh, Nana died today, like 20 years ago. Like, why are you sharing that? Now, hey, I'm glad to be reminded that, oh my God, I didn't realize Nana died today. But now everyone in your following group knows, and just so they can say, oh yeah, miss her, and they can make a comment. Like this, like, I gotta share my good and my bad stuff with everyone. I think it's so stupid. I think it makes you unintelligent. I know it's a really harsh opinion, but I just don't see the good that comes out of it, one way or the other. And then on top of that, you're tracking how many freaking likes and views, and like, that's just...
Well, Instagram got rid of the like counter.
Instagram did? Mm-hmm. Good for that, man.
But I mean, you're going back to the high school example. Yes, it was contained. But you always had like the exaggerated story that got spread and turned mm-hmm. out to be not true, and it was contained. What do we have now? We have one giant high school. Mm-hmm. There is no like containment of anything. And I don't think that you can back that down. It's just one. We all need to recognize we're living in a giant high school, and if Susie wants to put her life, every waking moment of her life, out there for everybody, then, I mean, I wouldn't do it. But whatever consequences come from that, it's your fault.
Well, and that's what social media is good for and bad for, right? It's the connectivity. It's the ability for me as a nobody to be able to participate in, and I mean, I know I use LeBron too much, but like in LeBron James, like what he's doing, and it allows me to connect with him. And like, there's value in that for people, and there's value in that for a lot of people. And maybe on a smaller scale, like our industry is very interconnected via Twitter. And like, that allows people who don't work together, who don't see each other, who don't communicate on any sort of regular basis, to be like part of each other's circles. And that's valuable. I'm not disagreeing with you, Jeff, because I think there are probably way more negatives than positives. But the positives are pretty profound.
I agree with you 100%. I mean, that whole connectivity, the ability for like-minded, smart professionals in the healthcare industry, doctor, our industry, being able to communicate, share ideas is phenomenal. I guess I'm more focused on like the mundane, and I hate to isolate this group of people, but.
Oh God, are you gonna say the housewives?
Oh my God, yeah. Like the mundane housewife post of literally everything you've done today.
Yeah.
That's like, you've just taken this technology and you've just,
so but here's what I think the solution is, and it's no different than the people who buy National Enquirer at the grocery store, which is, if I'm following your example, Jeff, of the mundane housewife talking, showing a picture of her yogurt, why are you following that person? Shut them off, mute them, block them. Why are you even, like, turn them off?
Yeah.
And then she'll be eventually sharing that with nobody, and then she'll stop doing it.
Yeah, no, she'll never be sharing with nobody, because there's the other housewife. And we shouldn't pick on housewives. But as much as we're saying the connectivity for the financial Twitter, why don't housewives get to be connected to one another? Like, who are we to say that they shouldn't get to share their yogurt stories other? I mean,
it's gotten to the point where I now, like, I get it. I accept it. I'm like, oh, it's another one of those annoying people. And you don't, and I don't block them, but I don't.
But I've gotten to the point. Follow any of it. Yeah, I mean, and I follow very few people on Twitter. But before I go to another one, I think hard about, do I want this person's feed showing up in my feed? Because if it's like a waterfall all the time of bullshit, you're out.
It's a great way to say it, a waterfall of bullshit, and that's what happens. And those people, it's just a detriment to them, because then you'll be at a party like, oh my God, did you see Sally? Oh my God, she's the worst. All she does is post stupid shit on Facebook. And so like they create an
anti-following.
Yeah. Just a persona of themselves.
Yeah.
And it's not good, which is, I guess, that's cool with me.
Yeah.
That those oversharers become hated in everyone's eyes.
And now with like Twitter, Instagram, I don't know about Facebook, but like you can mute people. So there's this thing, this like, if I follow you, you follow me, right? Like this like expectation that the relationship is mutual, the digital relationship, connection, whatever you want to call it. So like, I know that there are people who I follow on Instagram who like, I don't give a shit about. But I've been told, like, oh, you don't follow me. Like, follow me back. So I follow, and then I hide them. So I don't see a single friggin' post.
But if you wanted to see their posts, you can go to them and see
I could,
them.
Absolutely. And they see that I follow them. They don't know that I've muted them.
Right.
Twitter has the same thing. All right, yeah, I'll follow you on Twitter. I never want to see a single thing you tweet. Right. So you're also muted. I mean, I just think, and it's hard, though, because we talked about it last pod, about, like, confirmation bias. Like, I do so much to tailor my feed to what I want to see and hear that it borders on like making my circle, my opinions, what I'm reading and feeling too small. But like, the balance is, I don't know where, if it even exists.
Yeah, all good points.
I don't want to see your kids' first steps. That should be something that you and your husband, or you and your wife, treasure to yourselves. Okay. You want to share it with grandmom and grandpop? That's cool. That's awesome. The entire friggin' world?
Not the entire world. We're talking about people who have 7 followers. Like, we need to keep that in mind. Right?
My wife's cousin shared it, posted. And I saw it, and I'm like, that's cool. Cause I love the kid. He's a super awesome kid. He's taking his first steps. But then I sat back, and I was like, man, when all of my kids took their first step, it was me and my wife. We saw it. We went. And that was something, like, cool, and something that we own that we'll... no one else gets, and there's value in that to me.
To you, yeah. Sure. And I think for a lot of people, and I'm playing devil's advocate here, the ability for these platforms to connect family members and friends who are not there and who don't get to experience those things in your house with you, that means something to people.
And I'm cool with that. Yeah. They don't have to take my opinion on it.
I think generally where we're getting is that people who get paid to talk about shit need to be right.
They need to treat it like a profession.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Agree. I just don't, again, back to the beginning, I'm totally confused as to how it gets fixed.
I don't know that it does.
You know, unless someone gets sued. I mean, I guess that's how it gets fixed, right?
Yeah.
Or electric chair.
Jesus.
Right? Right?
Who are we putting in the chair?
The guy who reported Kobe's daughters all died. Put him in the chair. Yeah.
But like, who did he hear it from?
Then people will check their facts before they report.
He probably didn't just make it up. He probably heard it from someone else. So now we gotta like...
The other ones who need the chair, and this is obviously tongue in cheek, are the ones who just post motivational quotes and like billboards of like sayings for the day.
I agree.
I mean...
So what's worse? That person or the person who posts their workout?
Yeah, that too. All of it. All of it.
They all got to go. They all got to go.
They all got to go. All right.
All right.
Don't follow any of us on Twitter.
Because guess what? We're going to mute you.
Okay. The last article is, it's called Pink Whitney Scores for Spittin' Chiclets, Barstool Sports, and New Amsterdam Vodka. This was written by Carol Schramm from Forbes. Mike, I'm going to let you take it. Barstool, hockey, vodka. What do you got?
Yeah, so the article basically is just talking about what a smashing success this partnership has been. And basically, it's a podcast that was started a couple of years ago. And it's literally the first podcast I ever listened to. And it's the first one I started listening to consistently. And they have, I think, 200-plus episodes now. And it's two former NHL players not far removed from being in the league. Good guys, good personalities. The whole thing is they bring on a guest, and usually it's a very entertaining guest telling stories, pretty irreverent. They have to toe the line between, you know, the storytelling, like lots of stories can't be told, right, even in this format, but it's very, very entertaining. They talk hockey a little bit, and then they talk to the guest, and they just are, it's a good chemistry between all of them, highly entertaining.
You're basically describing our podcast.
Yeah.
Are they sharing like behind the scenes inside hockey stuff?
Oh yeah.
Like normal people don't get access.
Yeah,
to?
There's that and just it's just very good. I mean, the hockey fan community has just like taken to it.
Well, hockey's a cult.
It is.
So if you get something good there, the whole community is going to take it.
And I think the point of this is that like hockey players are a unique breed. They're very typically humble, reserved, modest. They give the cliches. There's not a lot of characters in the world of hockey, and that's partially how they're raised, but it's also it's the code of the league. So post game interviews and those sorts of things, you're just getting nothing. This is the first time I think there's an outlet to get, and a lot of it's former players. Now they can tell stories that they couldn't when they're still playing.
Sure. Right.
And it's just awesome. I mean, to hear some of the stuff that goes on the road, you know, in the locker room, stories about just everything. It's just great. I love it, of course. But anyway, this Pink Whitney thing. So Ryan Whitney's one of the co-hosts. and he's a Massachusetts guy, and he's a funny dude, and he started early on talking about how much he loves vodka and lemonade, like vodka and pink lemonade.
He loved pink lemonade.
He would just have that drink on his own, like as a refreshing like drink on the golf course or something. And somebody got the idea to partner with New Amsterdam Vodka, which I think was a sponsor, like an early sponsor of the podcast at the time. And then they said, hey, let's just brand this the Pink Whitney. And within no time at all, Canada still can't get it.
Yeah.
Like, it's insane how much millions of bottles have sold already. I bought one bottle. I'm not a fan of pink lemonade and vodka, so I'm not going to like drink it. But lots of people love it. And it's just unreal. Like, and I can't imagine how much money it's made for the, and Barstool Sports is the parent of the podcast itself. Yeah. And, it's helped, you know, grow that franchise more. And that Barstool Sports, by the way, they just got an investment today, valuing it at $450 million.
Oh my God.
So that thing's taken off too. But anyway, the article was really just about that rocket ship that's been the drink, how great it's been for, I think Gallo Wines or whatever owns the vodka brand. It's great. I love it because I can't wait for it to drop. It drops twice a week, and I'm like, I'll wake up and be like, oh, cool, they have a new pod up. It's awesome.
Well, I was listening to a guy talk today. I won't mention his name because I don't like him. And
one of these guys?
No, just another person. And he was saying, if you have something good today, a product, a service, like there's no reason you can't succeed. Like if it's good, if people want it, black, white, rich, poor, doesn't matter who you are, what you are, you have in the palm of your hands with our technology the ability to make it successful. And these guys did it, man, because of the platform they were on. Imagine they were just sitting like somewhere, probably at a bar, like, dude, we should like mass produce this. And one guy was probably like, you're freaking crazy. And they did. And it, not only did they do it, it's successful. Like all because of their podcast. I would argue probably it's because of the podcast.
Most definitely it is. Yeah. And even going back to the origin of the podcast, I think they kind of fell into that too. Because they were like, I think there is another guy that helps run it and participate in it that started the podcast with Whitney. Like in their basement, and they were just recording pod like we are doing.
Right.
Nobody was listening to it, and then through that platform of Barstool, it was made available, and people like me were like, "Oh, I'll give this a listen."
Right.
And then I never went back.
I think it speaks more to not to discredit the pod itself, but I think it speaks to the umbrella that is Barstool. It's just it's everywhere. I mean, there are a million podcasts that are produced by or use Barstool in their name or use the logo. And that gives you obviously a platform where New Amsterdam even cares to promote, right? Because they know people are listening to it. I think it's pretty cool though.
Yeah. And just back to Barstool, like I think it's pretty cool that, you know, really a few years ago, it didn't really exist at all. Mm-hmm. And it's just a bunch of like kind of irreverent bloggers just posting stuff about sports and kind of crude stuff here and there. And they were very smart about it. They got like people writing about different subject matters, sports and things like that. And it's for a long time. I go on there every day and read because there's a lot of content.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And they do a good job of just blasting it like all day long.
Isn't Barstool like people getting hurt and doing stuff like crazy stuff?
That's their Instagram. So, yeah. But like that's all people like tagging Barstool. Do you know what I mean? Like something happens and someone sent it. Barstool does no work to acquire that content.
It's like a fraternity party in Alabama somebody
they're just like,
out.
Oh, how funny would this be on Barstool? So
dude, it's so funny because Jackass did that how many years ago? 15 years ago? But it was all video.
Well, and you didn't have this.
Right. Dude, but this is what's crazy. How the concept hasn't died. There was a guy I graduated high school with. So I was in high school from 91 to 95. And he was kind of a weird dude, but he always walked around with like a video camera. And he would walk into Wawa
and like make funny noises and walk around like a dancing chicken and like do stupid shit. And his buddy would videotape him and they'd kick him out. And like we all thought he was like the goofiest, craziest person on the planet. He was doing it before Jackass.
Yeah.
He was doing it before Barstool.
Yeah.
Like he was smart enough that now he didn't do anything with it other than make ridiculously goofy videos. But that sells, man. And Barstool has capitalized on it. It's crazy.
Well, again, I hate to like beat a dead horse. Like here are these college kids who are one of however many that have the opportunity to go viral on this website. Like it's the connectivity between the normal people, quote, normal people, and this brand that is like everywhere right now. Everyone knows Barstool. Everyone listens to a podcast. Everyone's seen an Instagram post.
And all these college kids want to get on Barstool. Let's do something. Let's see if we can get
Is it Barstool? Because if you're on Barstool, then you're viral. You're being talked about for some amount of time.
So how was the Pink Whitney?
Well, I mean, it's pink lemonade and vodka. I mean, you know what it tastes like.
Is New Amsterdam good vodka?
I don't think it is.
I've had their regular vodka, and I think it's okay.
Would you compare it to...
I feel like it's Tito's, or any of those.
I'm a bit of a vodka
snob. You are. You don't get an opinion in this conversation.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, okay.
Top five one-word movie titles. Who wants to go first?
Yeah, go first, Jeff. Go ahead.
Okay.
This was actually way easier than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, you were both kind of hating on this.
Yeah.
Whew, man, this is, there's so many. I'll put them in order as I go. Number five, I would go with Blow.
Oh, yeah,
that's a good one.
That's a good one.
One of my favorite movies of all time.
Really?
Yeah. Number four, I'd go Tombstone. Oh, shoot. Hold on. Sorry. Take that out. Number four, I would go Swingers.
Never saw Vince? Swingers.
Yeah. Vince Vaughn's first movie.
Yeah. I've been meaning to watch it. Never saw it.
Yeah. Like it now. Number three, I will go Snatch.
Yeah. I thought about that one.
I've never seen that.
Number two, I will go Heat.
Okay.
And number one, I'll go Scarface.
Huh. Interesting.
Okay.
Did you guys... Okay. So you never saw Swingers?
I think I maybe did not see Heat.
Did you see any of the ones I mentioned?
I mean, Meg? Yeah, Scarface, sure.
I've seen Scarface.
Yeah.
Okay.
What were your other ones?
Blow, Heat, yes.
Heat, I've Blow, seen Blow, Swingers.
I've seen Blow. Yeah.
I'll give you mine in no order. And again, I'll just qualify it. Like, I avoided anything that was like, my criteria is if I'm flipping through and it's on, I'm watching it.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I'm not doing that with Jaws or Avatar or any of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I'm with you.
Okay.
Mine followed the same
suit. Okay. So, no particular order. I got Slapshot.
Shocking.
Shocker. Like a hockey theme here.
Miracle.
I got, following the comedy line, I got Caddyshack.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. My other three are Fargo.
It's a good one. I thought about it.
By the way, they're coming out with another season.
I was going to ask. I've never seen the show. Is it good?
I love it.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
You're referring to the movie, though.
The movie, yeah. And the shows are good, too. And then my fourth one is Seven,
which I thought was... made my list.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Brad Pitt.
I love that movie. Yeah.
It's dark.
Yeah, but it's... I like it.
Yeah, okay.
And then finally, I got Goodfellas.
Okay.
Okay.
You guys are going to hate most of mine. Clueless.
Wow.
Based on if it's on TV, I will absolutely tune into Clueless at whatever point during this movie that it's on.
That's a good one.
Crash.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Seven. Hook.
Hook, really?
I love Hook.
I don't think I saw Hook.
Hook, what the hell is that?
Is that Johnny Depp?
Peter Pan. No, it's Robin Williams as Peter Pan and... Who's Hook?
Like Hook's the bad guy, right? Captain
Hook. Captain Hook. Oh my God, who is?
Oh, is it Antonio Banderas?
No, it's
good guess.
Hold on, my dad, if he ever listens to this, would murder me.
Must be Eminem then.
What?
Thought your dad was
Dustin Hoffman.
Dustin Hoffman.
You guys have never seen Hook?
No. Dustin Hoffman, Rain Man?
Julia Roberts. Dustin Hoffman movies.
Is he Rain Man?
Julia Roberts is Tinkerbell.
That sounds horrible.
It's not. It's so good. Rufio. You don't remember none of this?
No.
And then my last one, Superbad.
That was on.
That
my
was
list.
Under consideration.
I think you could have had a whole comedic category.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
I think that's fair.
Superbad is very underrated.
So underrated. Although I wonder if it's underrated.
The end scene rated. When they're like laying in the sleeping bags next to each other.
Poop.
It's so cringy. I have trouble watching it.
I don't know if there's two people who. You can't replace either of them in that movie. Like, they're the only two
that worked perfect
who could
together.
Make it work as good as it as they did.
Boop.
All right.
All right.
Thank you for listening.
Thanks, guys.